You know what? It's surprisingly easy to create your own website, blog, or online store. With Weebly, you can bring your vision to life. Anyone at any skill level can build a fully functional website with Weebly. Whether you're a beginner or a professional, the interface is fun to use and there is no coding required. Weebly was created for people with the courage to start their own business and the dream to be their own boss. Again, you don't need to be a web designer or know how to code to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Weebly has a wide variety of professionally designed, mobile-friendly themes to choose from. Simply drag and drop to quickly build and publish your site. It's that easy. And you can truly customize, update, and change your site anytime you want from any device. So look, join the over 30 million people who are already dreaming big with Weebly. Get started today for free at Weebly.com/crush. That's Weebly.com/crush. Weebly.com/crush. Peace. All right, everybody. Welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson. You don't want to cheer. You don't want to cheer. You're just breathing into the microphone. Anyway, and guys, in case you're tuning in for the first time ever, first of all, shame on you. Secondly, please keep tuning in. But this show covers all things innovation, creativity, smart people doing smart things in the world. And today the buck does not stop. The buck does not stop because you're all about the bucks. Please say hello, Mike Rothenberg.
Hello, everybody.
Wow, you sound so mature and commanding in my ears right now.
It's your show. Brings out the best.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Okay. We'll see. if you don't mind, give the people a little bit of a 101, the 90-second version of who Mike Rothenberg is and what you're up to.
All right. I'm Mike Rothenberg, and I currently run a couple of companies, Rothenberg Ventures, an early stage venture capital firm. We have a strategy of investing in frontier technologies, which I'm sure we'll get into, and building ecosystems to help do that. And the second company is River Studios, and it's a virtual reality and can do other media too, studio and production company. So we make content.
So you have no shortage of time available.
If I ever get a few more minutes, I start another company.
Well, let's not give you any more minutes because you're already taking over the world. So let's go to your first point. What is frontier tech?
Frontier technology is the space between R&D and mass market adoption. So it's when a exciting technology is really growing. So it could be, you know, the internet in the 90s or mobile in the early 2000s. And today it's things like virtual reality and augmented reality, artificial intelligence, machine learning, computer vision, satellite, space, drones, robotics. All these things work, but aren't necessarily mass market adopted. So they're in that gap of high growth without a lot of infrastructure around them.
And when you talk about the infrastructure and the ecosystems that you're building around, that's a really interesting point, because I think, yes, people think virtual reality is cool, or at least the ones who know what it is, right? I think that's all part of being on the frontier of something.
Right.
Yes, you're investing in the companies who are making the technology and the hardware and the software, but then how do you approach the marketplace to expand their growth? And like, your exactly. ROI, which is a term I hate, but
exactly. Well, that's the key about the types of technologies that are passing through R&D and they work, but not everybody uses them, is they don't know about them either. So to build great companies, you need people to make decisions. You need people to want to join the company. So they have to know the industry exists. And if talented people don't know it exists, they're not going to know to join it or build a company. There's also, you need to attract capital. Investors need to invest in it. Usually you have to build for a while before there's big profit pools. So you got to invest. And then there's always experienced entrepreneurs, advisors, customers. All these people need to be making decisions that help support your company and your industry. So in the early days, when it's not that well known, you can build ecosystems, meaning bring people together, in our case, we have an accelerator where we invest in. Right now we have 18 companies in the River Accelerator, and they're building these kinds of frontier technology companies, and then we can bring them together with, have them have demo days or have them bring them all together to show all of their technologies off, and then that attracts other great people who want to learn about it, and then maybe they get excited about it, and then you can start to build that momentum.
And then it's kind of, you're like dropping the first domino in a sense.
That's right.
So I can't help but notice that you're a young man. a lot of articles out there, you know, I think you, Rothenberg, you started when you were 28-ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 28.
And I would imagine this is, you got like a multi-layered pitch, right? First of all, it's like, who's this kid, right? And then also like, what kind of technology are you talking about? And you want me to give you, like, I'm just thinking on the investor side alone. Like to go, hey, guys, give me your money. Trust me with it.
Yeah. Right.
What's the Mike Rothenberg pitch experience to get people on board to be a part of what you're doing?
Well, there's a very different pitch when you first start than after you've been going for a few years. And the difference is, you're attracting almost, in our case, even though it was a venture capital firm, it still feels a lot like a seed round or an angel investing round where people are basically investing on you, your ability to walk through walls, you know, how nuts are you? Are you the right kind of nuts? Do we think that you...
What kind of nuts are you?
Well, the people who invested think that, you know, hopefully think that I'm the right kind of nuts.
Right.
But you have to be nuts to do any kind of startup. And if you want to start a venture capital firm and bootstrap that, you know, it's another level of nuts. So if people have to think that you... we'll do that. We'll actually follow through. And the way that they judge that a lot of times is based on your reputation and their experiences with you. By the time I was 28, I was young, but I had 10 years of experience at Stanford and in the businesses I was doing and building relationships and then again in business school. So there were a lot of people who ended up investing in me when I started already knew me and may have known me for 10 years. So that was like a 10-year pitch, not like a 1-week pitch.
So you kind of basically spent the 10 years building a network and like, hey guys, I got an opportunity or I have an idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of those people, especially at the very beginning, probably would have given me, you know, one shot, whatever it is I was pitching them, and say, okay. And when I told them that it was, trying to build a venture capital firm, they were probably like, oh,
like another one. You're like, all right, here's a little bit of, so that's interesting though, like, 10 years prior, which puts you at 18, you know, high school U.S. math Olympian. Yeah.
Before that.
Standing on the podium, like just cheered on your country. It's cool.
Did a lot of math.
5 times 7.
Yeah.
No. What is it?
I'm not even going to answer that.
So what, I have an 11-year-old and I just will blurt out math problems. And
that's good.
If she messes up, I beat her. but no. So, you know, what at 18.
You beat her in math.
Yes, thank you. You just
making sure.
Just got the FCC off my back. You're a good dude. At 18, 15, 13, like, what was your future vision for yourself? Like, what was it this? Like, or were you just like the math guy?
I spent, my first 18 years in Central Texas, just north of Austin. Really close-knit family. I've got 3 siblings, mom, dad. We never moved either. And, really, we would very creative. You know, we did a lot of things together, and we would, you know, even make parodies and songs and all kinds of stuff from time to time. But pretty.
I want to see the Rothenberg family like album, not the photo album, the album that you the parody album.
No, you don't. but you know, pretty little town though, so not a whole lot going on, and basically could spend a lot of our time on various things. So my older brother put almost all of his time into things like architecture. He's an architect now, and my older sister was just playing music a lot, and she became a semi-professional piano player and music teacher, and she's amazing. And my little brother's an animator. He was just drawn ever since he could put a hand, put a pen in his hand, and he's, you know, it's incredible to see what he does. And I do math, and right now a lot of the, you know, my creative channel is building businesses, and the thing those things have in common is pattern recognition and problem solving. So I would always have math problems with me. I would either in my head or actually carrying them around. So really I was, you know, even from the time I was like 12 to 18, you know, I was probably doing math almost constantly.
What was it about math that like resonated with you? Because it's not as common as most, say, Americans would like, especially for their kids. You know, to like, we all want our kids to be like, I wish you would pick up a, you know, a math book and not like a Fifth Harmony CD.
Matt, we don't make math fun for kids. It's actually a traumatic experience most of the time. So if by the time you go into school and then you get shown math problems and you're, you know, everybody falls off kind of at some point.
Right.
You know, maybe it's not the first class, but it could be like, you know, third grade. But at some point you get a bad teacher or something goes wrong. You know, you miss a bunch of classes and you miss the links. And that happens to almost everybody. And so then by that time, you're kind of faking it after that. You're trying to memorize stuff for these tests that you don't want to take. There just seems to be that annoying guy or girl that seems to get it. And, you know, you don't really you don't really have time to like ask them. I started a tutoring company at Stanford and I tutored probably a couple hundred kids. So,
wow.
So I got to, this is, I saw what was going on and actually what's funny is that all of them were smarter than they thought they were, all of them. And I was just curious why they thought they were so bad at math, because after spending some time with them, they weren't, almost any of them. And it was always the same, like nobody invested in them enough to help catch them up. And then they didn't know to be proactive enough to do it. So when you're not that good at something and somebody's making you do it, it's really terrible. So that's why people hate math. It's not because they started off hating math. It's because they learned to hate math.
Well, as long as I'm counting this money, I will love math. That's cool. And I love that, you know, it's your creative outlet for, I refer to most innovation as creative problem solving, right? And the fact that you've ventured out into this arena. I'm curious though, with Rothenberg, especially as a relatively new venture firm and River Studios even newer, how you go about, and you're in Silicon Valley, which is crazy. And I think, to establish a new brand in that space. Yes, there's Frontier Tech, but there's also a lot of other funds that kind of dabble in that space a little bit, maybe differently than you do. But, you know, how did you go about establishing a brand? Thankfully, I got to spend a day with you and your team this past week.
That was fun.
That was super fun. But it felt like a really cool brand and a really cool bunch of people to be around, which is, you know, you don't necessarily associate that when you think about Silicon Valley. So how did you go about establishing that brand?
We believe in ecosystems too, so that gives us permission to do things like try to build community. That's where people have a shared sense of purpose. And what I think what venture capital was supposed to do, and what it started off doing, you know, 50 years ago, was actually investing in frontier tech. So there was a bigger funding gap if you wanted to build, you know, Intel. Like, how are you going to get semiconductors done? So you just need a bunch of money, and there wasn't, you know, that's where venture capital industry started, was helping with that stuff. And that was just super frontier tech, and almost everything was. Now there's really a whole lot of Me Too companies. You know, maybe you can make a little bit better app, or maybe your website or your e-commerce thing's a little better. And, you know, by and large, a lot of the industry has kind of shifted away to being really technology startup investors, as opposed to frontier tech, where I think a lot of the growth is, and where a lot of the you know, really interesting part is. So when it comes to the ecosystem, it means that part of our strategy is to bring people together. It can be small dinners. It can be, you know, we have the accelerator every week. We have, you know, open houses. We can have people come by and try the stuff. It's also like user feedback. And then a lot of really great things happen when you have a lot of interested, curious people talking to each other a lot. So we're really facilitating tons of these interactions. It's kind of a belief in people. And when it comes to building a brand, you need people to pay attention, to care, and to have a consistent experience.
Right.
So if people are coming by and actually meeting us and meeting people we invest in, meeting each other, and it's consistently high quality of experiences, things they're seeing, people they meet, then it keeps reinforcing itself. So just like, you know, we were talking about earlier with math and pattern recognition and problem solving, a lot of this stuff is reps. So only interact with a brand once, you don't have any idea what it stands for, and you won't even remember it.
Right.
If you interact with it a lot, have a lot of interactions, when you came and hang out with us, you probably had a lot of interactions there. And if they had a consistent feel to it, then
nobody talked to me. I felt very lonely. Just sat in the corner crying most of the time.
Yeah, that was you. Okay.
Yeah, that was me. Oh, yeah. You saw the heap of clothes and just
that was
shivering.
Sad.
Yeah. Thanks for walking by.
No, but if you have a lot of interactions like that, then you can start to form community and some consistency, and that's the brand. And I think by both our strategy and our efforts, I don't know of any other venture capital firms that have that facilitate that many interactions. That gives us an opportunity to have a very strong brand.
Well, that's an investment in and of itself. And I think a lot of times people make a business decision on, like, I mean, to take over, you know, for the AT&T Park field, I'm sure was, you know.
Hey, let me tell you about that. So that was our third annual founder field day at AT&T Park. So it was funny because it's consistent with this, how do you build a brand question? Because we wanted to bring people together in a big way, have our annual meeting and have all these demos and bring all these founders. So founders are people who build these companies, and they're pretty phenomenal people. And it's really hard to get them to go do anything besides build their company. The best ones, super addicted to building their company, and they should be. And so the idea was, okay, how would we design this from a founder perspective to make this a must-attend event? And so with that as its design principle, then you come to some interesting conclusions. You would want to do a year of networking in a day because you're real busy. So maybe you're not going out much. So you need to have a lot of really amazing people there. And then it needs to be really interesting. So when we have 40 frontier technology companies with a lot of VR demoing, it's like seeing 10 movie premieres at once. You're just seeing everything come. Even the people who are building this stuff want to see that stuff. So that makes that really compelling and educational. And then we thought, but if we had it at, like, you know, some hotel lobby, like, or something, conference room.
Ooh.
Right? Like everything
the
else.
The banquet room.
Right. And it was secretly like a conference. You know, we never used that word. So the words you use matter too. And so we said, what would be, it needed to be in San Francisco because we're in the Bay Area, and we think that's the center of the ecosystem. And you don't want to make people drive a lot if they're coming from the city. So it's like, okay, so what are the iconic venues in San Francisco? And our number one choice was AT&T Park. It's extremely iconic. It also gave the right vibe. You know, you want people to, it's a playfulness to it.
Yeah.
We do let everybody hit baseballs from home plate. That's just another, you know, fun aspect to it. They're flying drones, have race cars, all this stuff, you know, VR. It's just a lot of that stuff is because you want people to care and to come out. And then what happens is then they talk to each other when they're there and all the connections are made.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we realized that, that it had to be iconic and it had to be really, you know, big like that, or it wouldn't be interesting enough to get all the people that we wanted to encourage to be there.
So since we're fresh off your third one, you know, what are the immediate pieces of feedback you get? Like because I refer to those moments as collisions. You facilitated a lot of collisions, right? Whether you're standing in line to hit baseballs, or you like you're waiting in line to do Magic Leap, or, you know, any of this stuff. Not Magic Leap, but
HoloLens.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And Meta. We had two ARs.
Yes, I did Meta, which was really cool.
It's awesome.
But yeah, you're facilitating those collisions at that moment in time. So that's pretty awesome. The feedback. What's the immediate thing that comes back to you? Like, what do you hear immediately?
They really don't want to wait a year to do that again.
You're like, well, you're gonna have to.
Yeah.
To give the audience a little bit of examples of the types of people there that were there. I mean, I met somebody who worked on the Google Contact Lens, and his robotics friends who's doing like robots for hotels and things like that. But then you've got a salesperson who does VR advertising. Like, you know, it's just, right. It's just really, you know, and I would imagine a conversation between those three people and out of what, 700 or 800 that attended during the day?
Yeah, we had 1,000.
Oh, okay. See, I can't do math. that's a great testament to what you guys do. And then throughout the year, like, what are the mini versions of, you know, those brand experiences?
I think there's some interesting demo days when we have a concentrated group of companies that get to feature and show off their what they're building and get interest. And then we have I think we're going to do something pretty exciting next summer, 2017, we're going to bring together, you know, that kind of conference feel where you have some of the panels and stuff, but then we'll also have VR premieres, because I think by the time of next summer, that will be a pretty well-known phenomenal thing to have VR. But I think the quality of the content will be stepped up a lot. They'll also have, you know, musicians. Like, the idea there is we'll bring a lot of folks together and do all the things people want to do. That's going to be exciting.
So I'm looking forward to it. All summer 16. Oh, sorry, it's my drink. When I think about VR, and I work a lot with VR myself, and we actually did a project with you guys, so thank you. But the question I always get asked, especially by civilians, is like, are people really going to do this? Like, you know, or even some of the brands and things that I get to talk to on a regular basis. It's like, is this really going to happen? Like, what do you see the realistic future of VR being?
Well, you probably have two types of listeners right now. The people who are skeptical of VR and the people who have tried VR.
Right.
No one's skeptical once they've tried it.
I don't know. Like, so, I mean, to me, and this is by far not the best comparison, but sometimes I say part of me feels like it's going to go the way of the 3D TV. It'll be a big hype of millions of units will ship, and then people will be like, okay, I watched two movies on it. If I have a VR headset in my home, like, how often am I going to sit down and explore a piece of VR content?
I think just in the last, 24 hours or something, Google just announced that they've created the standards for VR development, which is a really big deal. It's the equivalent of Android for VR. And they also announced they're going to be building hardware on it and software and everything else. They're coming into the consumer play.
Right.
And maybe they think that Apple is slow to the ball here, and all the profits they made with the iPhone back in the day will now open for grabs. Maybe Google can get them on the VR side. Facebook's been slow to ship their Oculus Rift.
They sold out quickly, though.
Sold out quickly.
Like 15 seconds at CES, and then it's like suddenly.
Happened with the Vive 2.
Like, where is it? Yeah, the Vive 2. Yeah.
It sold out fast, too, and HTC is really, really smart to go in all in on VR. Their other businesses are struggling. So, Google is really ahead of the game here by creating the standards. It's incredibly smart. All of the big tech companies are investing billions into this. It will be impossible for it to be the case that there's only 3 to 5 million units shipped, because there's 100 million in development. In terms of what you would do every day, I think that the daily application for it will likely still be communications, as it is with every kind of platform, whether it's your mobile phone or your laptop. And the kind of communication that we'd like to do is to have that feeling of presence with friends and family, loved ones. I live in a different state now than a lot of my family. And if I'm, reading a bedtime story to my nephews or my niece, I'd rather feel like I was there. And I would much rather do that in VR. And even if I can't hold them, which I'd like to do, if I can see them and see their expressions and kind of feel like they're right there, then that will be for them and for me, 100%. That will be a memory.
Yeah. Samsung just announced like their whole like bedtime stories thing, which is looking pretty cool.
And that's something you would do every day if you could, was spend a few minutes with loved ones.
Yeah. And then, I think there's the other implications. I think when most people think of it or they hear about it, it's usually from some sort of consumer facing standpoint, but you've also got like the medical implications. You mentioned this even in your opening talk, it was about like treating PTSD and helping medical students learn how systems work, just through VR, let alone AR being, sort of the same implications, even in, I think the medical industry is really causing a spike in augmented reality because of what can be done in hospitals now.
Oh, it's very exciting.
So it's exciting for you. So outside of VR, AR, and all the other Rs, rated R for Rothenberg. Look, it's all magical. So what are some other, you talked about space, you talked about drones, like what other in the Mike Rothenberg ecosystem are you like really excited about, next?
So we do invest in a variety of things currently, and then I think you might be asking about what's coming up in the future, even that's like the frontier,
just like all the different vertical that you have, but yes, what is the final frontier?
So our current verticals that we spend a lot of time on are virtual reality, augmented reality, but then there's a whole family of artificial intelligence, machine learning, computer vision, which are all pretty related. And then there's also space and satellites. There's a lot of, you know, not anything from having consumer rides to space to collecting all the data from, you know, little and big satellites on all around the world. It's and even maybe asteroid mining. There's all kinds of interesting stuff that happens when it becomes not very expensive to send things to space.
Right.
And then we also have robotics and drones. Those are interesting now for similar reasons that a lot of the things that used to be expensive aren't. And so there's a lot of really interesting applications.
You're doing all the stuff that people are scared of.
If right. If there was an awesome Hollywood movie that involved technology, like Terminator or Matrix, you know, Matrix was VR, Terminator, you know, there's obviously robotics and AI.
People are scared.
If there's something some awesome movie, we probably invest in it.
That's true. Well, I think I've had this conversation a couple of times on the show. Shout out to Ari Popper from Sci Futures, which his company actually hires science fiction writers to invent futures for companies. So they've worked with like Visa and Crayola. Like they do really some amazing work. But, you know, especially at the intersection of Hollywood and what people have seen in mm-hmm. the Terminator. And it's like, yeah. Oh, no, the machines are taking over.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a lot of conversation, fear, apprehension, and excitement mm-hmm. about the pot. Like, I just got an Amazon mm-hmm. Echo. And I'm like, I talk to Alexa all the time. So like, my wife hates me now because I was like, shut up, I'm talking to Alexa. How do you deal with the people that, how do you help people overcome those sort of, I'll call them psychological hurdles?
That's one of the most important questions in technology. That's always been the case. Whenever there's a new technology, people are always worried about what it'll do. And they should be, they should always be thinking about it. Anything right. that causes a big change for good can also have negative consequences. And the example you're referring to is that with virtual reality, you can help people cure their PTSD because you can put them in situations where they can be, you know, evolving their memories and cure their phobias because you can practice, you know, speaking in front of people, flying on a plane, being in a car. You can practice these things from your home, and that helps. So that it also has the potentially to cause PTSD if you created a VR world that was that traumatic. So we have to be really careful about that, and that's a sense of responsibility. So really, very recently, because we build ecosystems, then it's some of our responsibility to understand some of these questions. So actually, earlier this week, we announced that we are doing the River Institute, and what we'll be doing with that is exploring those questions that come up inevitably with new technologies, and try to take a fair, you know, bipartisan look and see if what happens if you have a mobile phone right that close to your face. That's what VR is. And what if you have
Your eyes out?
A beam of light, you know, like in your eyes, like AR. And what happens when people have drones that they can fly all over the place? Like, where should they go? Where they should they not go? How do you keep that in order? You know, should robots be allowed to marry each other? These are important questions.
Robot marriage. You heard it here. That was silly. Is that a real? Is it?
No, I just threw that in there because you're looking tired. So I wanted to wake you.
No, I'm not looking tired. My wheels turning. I like this idea of a River Institute, and there's other sort of offshoots and things that you're working on that kind of, you know, don't necessarily. I mean, they affect the business that you're in, but they also answer these bigger questions and allow people to think a little bit more broadly, which I think is great in terms of how you try to build, you know, this relationship ecosystem. People can be more than just an engineer or a founder of a company. They can actually help solve the big problems, and you get to think big for them.
Mm-hmm.
So how will the River Institute work? Is that like, are you working with government? Is it government regulations? Are you like just kind of sitting in a room with a bunch of people and a glass of wine?
It's a think tank, and you know, we're hiring. We're hiring, you know, historians and analysts and you know, people to look into these difficult problems, and their output will primarily be white papers. So they'll just be like, here's the situation, and here are factors that play in, and here's factors that should be considered, and here's what we could do about it. So the suggestions won't be limited to just policy. Policy is something that is important, and that's what happens in Washington sometimes. And and then, but it can also say, well, we should also, you know, get the message out this way or that way or the other. And it should be a resource for anybody who's worried, because a lot of times people are worried because they don't understand it. So what we're trying to do first and foremost is open up the information and sharing and knowledge base and have a more balanced conversation.
Yeah. Speaking of conversations, you and I had a little conversation around politics, you know, being that this is an election year.
It is? Yeah. I haven't seen that in just the news at all.
No, there's a Democrat and a, I forget the parties, but anyway.
Well, one of the candidates is definitely a Democrat, and there's a Libertarian going after the Democrat, right?
Yep.
And then our socialist, yes, going after the Democrat.
Just
and then
call him old.
Then the other candidate, if we can call him that, definitely has no party affiliation, but realized how to take over the Republican Party. So they've been overthrown by I guess he's really good at reality TV star.
I heard about this guy.
Yeah, so that's what happened on that side, and
I think when you get to look at this whole broad ecosystem and you start to talk about policy, and I think decisions that can be made politically will also affect what you're able to do with this frontier tech and in your ecosystem. How are you fearful in any way of like the outcome? Or, you know, are you comfortable in the fact that, like, you're going to be awesome and amazing at the end of the day anyway? Or are you even combating any of the things that you kind of see coming down the pipeline?
I think it's naive to think that that what happens on the national stage doesn't affect all of us. And so it is really important to pay attention. And, I see some parallels here with this election and virtual reality, because I spent a lot of time asking smart people if they thought virtual reality was here and ready. And the answer was always no. And they always gave me outdated information about why.
Right.
And they were always wrong about that. And then when they got the new information, they changed their mind. And then that was one of the things we were doing when we invested in 40 virtual reality companies. We were also trying to convince people that it was here to stay, and it wasn't hard. Everybody, once they realized what was going on, did that. I think that there is something similar with this election. I do think that there's a lot of misconceptions about the Republican candidate in particular that are no longer true. And one of them was that I heard said a lot was that there was no way he could win the Republican nomination.
They've been saying that for years.
Right. They have. He's been saying publicly he'd like to be president for at least 3 decades.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons why he can get lulled into a sense of complacency, like it can't happen. Because it hasn't happened, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. Actually, VR was the same way. We've been aware of it for 30 years, and people are like, "Well, it's not happening." Well, just because it hasn't happened in the past doesn't mean it's not happening right now.
Right.
So when he won that, he disproved that, and we need to throw all of our other misconceptions out. So another misconception is that he can't win the presidency. I think he's leading the polls today already. We're 6 months away. He was behind Hillary like 10 points like a week and a half ago, and that's it. The gap's closed. And I think that part of that reason could be because there's a lot of disenfranchised people who are not having their voice heard in this country. And that has something to do back to the Institute again, which is, right, shouldn't we be thinking about what happens when there are shifts in demographics and shifts in technology, and what happens with people who maybe the whole society overall benefits, but there are some people who are left behind. Shouldn't we be doing something about that? And we should.
As a company, like this is also your first like changing of the guard, right? Like which is also just a daunting time in and of itself, I think, when you start to institute type of conversation.
Yeah. Although when there was, you know, Romney versus Obama, I wasn't very worried about that. I thought those were two incredibly competent people who were well prepared to run the presidency.
True.
And one of the things I look at the most about a leader, and especially the leader of the free world, it's a big responsibility. Is this a community person? Do they care about the people around them? Are they acting in the best interest of society? Are they empathetic? It's one of the most important things you could possibly do. And anyone who thought that this Republican candidate could not become the candidate needs to ask the question, is this person, and ask it on the other side, ask all the candidates, are these people, who are they capable of empathy? Do they show it? Can you tell that they're looking out for you? Can they tell that they're looking out for people around them? Do they exhibit leadership? Do they understand that the world is a complicated place and that they need to be listening and understanding in right. today's world? And are they, do they have a pattern of making good decisions that benefit other people? And in at least one of the candidates' cases, there is no evidence whatsoever that empathy exists, and there's no evidence whatsoever that this person can put the community above themselves. It's never happened. There's been hundreds of opportunities to do that, and there was no case in which the community was put in front of this person. So if you continue that line of thinking, then it does right. mean that in difficult situations where that person might individually benefit at the expense of society, then you can ask yourself what would happen there, and you need to really think about that.
Yeah, the empathy is such a great word, and I think it's a very it's a central, even focal point of we all sort of need to succeed. Like really, like you said, you know what your founders feel on a day to day basis, whether it's the angst or the fear or the loneliness of being in a room all day.
All of it.
And you designed your entire ecosystem around that, and you're right. Like I think with that particular candidate. There is that lack of there's no realization of the domino effect that's happening. And the scary thing for me, especially being a minority, is that, it's not that it's him. It's also just the fact that there are millions of people who agree with them. I mean, you talk about the disenfranchised people who may not,
I think they agree with change. So there's no way you could agree with him because he doesn't have any stand on anything that he sticks to. So it's not possible to agree with him, but you could agree with the concept of him, which is change in some way. Although he is obviously a politician, so the change that they'll
get—or is he?
Oh, of course he is.
Well, I mean, now he is, but yeah,
he's a master politician,
right? Let's switch gears. This is a very curious thing because I think we get a lot of marketers who listen to the show. We started off the show really. The Innovation Crush as a whole, kind of speaking to where marketers can go for, just what's next and what's new. How should brands be thinking about this early stage frontier technology that whether it's space, travel or VR, just how should they be thinking about it at this point in time? Is it time to test the waters with, craft?
I mean, at this point, I think that the majority of brands are testing the waters with especially with virtual reality. All of these types of things that we do play out in different ways. But with VR, you have the ability to have that feeling of presence. So one of the interesting things that could happen is existing retail stores could become destinations again, more so than in a world where, e-commerce exists. You don't have to go to stores. Really? But then in a world of VR, it's possible for stores to maybe even have VR installations in the stores that they only have in the stores. So they pull you there and it becomes part of an experience. And you can imagine going to, an outdoor clothes company place or something where you...
REI.
Sure. You go to REI and then they have a really, really awesome VR thing where you're climbing in the outdoors and you're hanging over cliffs, stuff you maybe wouldn't even do in real life. And that could be really awesome. And then, of course, very thinly veiled as an ad. You could have REI stuff all over the place and it could be a lifestyle. So I think that if you in the future, if you go to the mall, you may actually have a ton of awesome VR exhibits everywhere that helps engage, helps get your mind on it. I mean, you can also sit in front of the runway or be on the runway or something for a lot of the, higher fashion places. So I'd like to see that.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I think most brands are maybe not thinking about the business implications yet. They're thinking about marketing moments, right? They're thinking oh, can we create a piece of content or even mm-hmm. some sort of interactive experience, but not use it to start redefining their business.
Well, it's really cool if it could feel like an ad if you're just watching it, but if you're part of something and fun, and then it may not even feel like an ad. So when you talked earlier about building brands, and we talked about how that was number and quality of interactions and consistency. I do think VR gives brands that opportunity to create more of those moments. I mean, I think there was a commercial where somebody with, you know, it was like Folgers or something, where you're drinking coffee.
That's the best part of waking up.
Yeah, right. With your like your parents there or something. But in VR, if you're like, if that's actually a nostalgic moment for you, and then you use like facial recognition and, you know, computer vision to like put your parents actually there while you're drinking the coffee, it could actually just be really fun and interesting, even though it's also an ad.
I'd be nervous if my parents were standing in front of my bed
when
I woke up in the morning. You should see what I do in the morning.
Oh, I don't want to see that.
Just push-ups. That's all, just push-ups. you're right. We've talked about a lot of stuff. Education, politics, VR, AR, venture capital, et cetera, et cetera. As we wind down, you've seen a lot of stuff. I'm sure a lot of stuff comes across your desk on a daily basis. What is your current innovation crush? What is one of the things that you're going like, oh my gosh, I wish I could get in that, or that just amazes me for whatever reason?
Innovation crush. Interesting. When we see those, we invest in them. So, you know, we have like dozens of innovation crushes right now. That was on full
display. You
should invest
in the innovation crush. That's how you get your
what's that?
Nice. I thought that would kind of be the answer, but you know, is there anything else out there that you've seen? I mean, it might be something you've seen in cuisine, maybe not on the investment side, but just like, oh, I went to this restaurant and there was an amazing experience, or I saw these shoes that laced up from the back. I don't even know.
that's a great idea. There's a company called Two-Bit Circus that I think could bring back, you know, arcades. And it ties back to what I was saying about the malls, because Two-Bit Circus understands entertainment and frontier technology, and they bring them together for experiences that you could have, you know, in person. And if they put those, if they put their types of experiences in malls, they could also update them, like with software, like kind of like a Tesla can update its software and so it makes it a smarter car. I think they could do that with mall arcades, and it could then be cool again to go to the mall and to an arcade and see the stuff coming out next instead of the stuff that came out yesterday.
Yeah.
And so the people there are really wonderful people.
You're the first person that's answered that question with a previous guest from the show. So good job. There's no prize. I'm just letting you know. No, Brent and Nolan were guests on the show together.
Amazing.
And that was a really fun moment. I love Two-Bit Circus to death. I did a really cool project with them a couple of years ago. And happy to see their success so far.
So creative.
Yeah, he's amazing. And his wooden bow tie. last but not least, complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is...
beauty.
Nice. What's beautiful about it? Where do you see the beauty of the innovation kind of thing?
Well, we live in a changing world, and there's always opportunities for things to go right or wrong. And innovation helps guide us towards fixing things and moving things forward. And that is beautiful.
That is beautiful. You're beautiful.
You're beautiful.
You're handsome. Yeah, you're far more handsome than I am. And I like those Nikes too, the custom Rothenberg joints. Anything else? Where can people find you? Like, where do you find you on the interwebs? Do you social media? Do you just, you know, look for companies in your spare time?
I use social media occasionally. I have an Instagram handle. It's at Mike Roth. And then Twitter, it's at Mike_Roth. So those, you know.
Got it, guys. _ if you want to tweet.
yeah, tweet at me.
All right. Well, thank you for stopping by. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.